All right. Got rid of the green fuzzies. Good morning again. All right. It's good to go. Yeah. Welcome again. We are moving steadily, slowly through 1 Peter. Just encourage you to be reading through the book, and even in different translations or paraphrases can be really helpful to dig that deeper. And just wanted to share one that hit me for my whole Christian life. I had not understood this verse in 1 Peter until we've been going through this and seeing, oh, that's actually not what it meant, what I thought it meant. And it's our theme verse. So that's even better to know what the theme verse actually means. But in the ESV, right, it says, you rejoice now for a little while, if necessary. You've been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And that's the theme. That's what Peter's pushing towards, is he's saying, there's a purpose for all these trials. There's a purpose for all this suffering. And when I've read this for the last however many years, I always thought it meant the praise, glory, and honor when Jesus comes, like his praise and his glory and his honor. But that's not actually what it's saying. It's talking about you will receive praise and you will receive glory and you will receive honor. This is your opportunity. God wants to share his glory. He's not going to dishonor someone who deserves honor. And so a better, for me, a more helpful way, maybe just another translation, the contemporary English version. On that day, you'll be glad, even if you have to go through many hard trials for a while. Your faith will be like gold that has been tested in a fire, and these trials will prove that your faith is worth much more than gold that can be destroyed. They will show that you will be given praise and honor and glory when Jesus Christ returns. I never saw that. I never thought of that. And sometimes we can think, at least for me, where my head went with that was, God is so majestic. He's so holy. He's so perfect. You know, I'm just kind of this small, lowly one. He's the one that gets all the glory and honor, and that's true. But he's also in the business of esteeming and bringing us and calling us brothers. He says, you have value. You are a participant in my kingdom. You are a prince. You are a princess. And not only will I get glory and honor and praise, I'm sharing that with you. You will get glory. You will get honor. You will get, look at this. Look at this brother. Look at the trial that he walked through. Everybody, just stand amazed at how he trusted God. Look at this sister. Look at how she knelt in humility and trust as things got pressed in harder and harder. And on that day, to call out this appreciation and this approval over your life for the way that we go through trials, the way that we endure suffering. It's not that it goes missing, that somebody gets away with anything. It will be remarked about. It will be talked about. Well done, my good and faithful servant. Certainly, you to the Lord will happen, but all this company of others saying, wow, that is amazing. Well done. We will join in that congratulations as Jesus bestows that. And so that's our opportunity. That's what Peter's talking about. You have this opportunity, and that's what this whole book is about. This book is about enduring suffering while looking to the promises of God, to the welcoming the presence of God in the hope of what he's bringing and saying, it's worth it. You're worth it. And I will choose to trust you. And we're going to kind of mine and drill just a little bit deeper. As Rob taught a couple weeks we were gone, it was great. Just wanted to loop back on a couple of things similarly to Pat, but a little bit later in chapter 3. And one of the things that we can forget is, with all the promises, like Pat shared in chapter 2, these identities of being living stones, of being a called out people, all these promises, There's also promises embedded in this book. If you really took this and said, this is what was promised you when you were thinking, do I want to follow Jesus or not? You were promised suffering. I don't know if you know what you signed up for. It may be like I joined the cross country team. What am I doing? I'm signing up for just suffering. But there's these promises throughout this book. He doesn't say if you endure suffering. He says when you do. It's a sure thing. Chapter 2, when they speak against you as evildoers, just assume it's going to happen. It's a promise. You will be spoken against. When you are slandered, your character, your reputation, what you stand for, it will be misconstrued and slandered at some point if you follow the path of Jesus. Chapter 4, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you as though something strange were happening to you. And so hopefully I read through 1 Peter and I get this unsettled feeling of what is my normal? What is my status quo? What am I expecting my life to look like? Because he keeps saying, when you're reviled, when you're slandered, it's not strange. Don't be surprised. Why are you surprised? Because you weren't expecting it. Obviously, he's calling them in that same place. What was their status quo? That this idea that when I follow Jesus, somehow it'll all be a bed of roses. Or at the very least, I might, you know, have to wake up early a couple days in my life. Or I might have to try something hard here or there. But is your expectation, like Pat shared, not only did Jesus go through the suffering for our justification, but to show us a way of living as an example? He had no place to lay his head. He said, I don't trust any of your guys's, you know, affirmations, because I know the fickleness of man. He was well aware the road he was on was one day the crowd loves you, the next day they want to throw you off the cliff. And all this good and this miraculous things that you've done and all the blessing you've brought, crucify him. That was the way of Jesus. Slandered, reviled, misunderstood, reputation and character. Can you imagine? Not only for us to have our reputation, our character slandered, can you imagine God? God, the perfect one. And someone says, you must be Beelzebub. You must be Satan. The very thing you're most not like, the very thing you could, through anybody's right lenses, never be accused of. Jesus was accused of being Satan. And he says, if they've called me that, how much more so those that follow in my way? And so there's this expectation that as a believer, part of the renewal of our minds is to understand renewing, this is normal. We don't belong here. This is not our home. We are pilgrims here. We are sojourners. And along the way, you will be misunderstood. You will be slandered. You will be reviled. And that is what the promise of 1 Peter says. And just to throw a little bit of layer on this. So he says in chapter 2, honor everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor. We can kind of just pass through that because they're just really short commands. So they think roughly 1 Peter was written maybe about 60 AD, somewhere in that time. And so when Peter is writing to this dispersion of peoples, he's saying, honor the emperor. Who is he talking about? There is an emperor at place in Rome ruling at that point. He's talking about this guy named Nero. And this is a reconstruction. They took all the busts that they've found of Nero and they've reconstructed what they think his face looked like. And to me, it's just like, whoa, okay, there's a person. Like, it's not just the statue. That could be what Nero looked like. And Nero was crazy. Just crazy. I mean, some of the things that happen in his life, you just go, this isn't just rated R. This is like whatever the next level is. it's just disgusting. Some of the sexual exploits and things that happened in his life. And there's this giant fire in Rome. He eventually blamed it on the Christians, said the Christians were at fault for this fire, started to crucify them, and would wrap them in flammable like plants and hides. And he would light the Christians on fire as they're being crucified to light up the city at night. And Peter says, honor the emperor. Honor the emperor. Part of your fear of God, to esteem God's opinion above anybody else's, is to honor that man because God's put him in power. God's in charge, not me. I want to read you guys. This is Tacitus, a Roman historian, about Nero. He says, therefore, to stop the rumor that Nero had set Rome on fire, he falsely charged with guilt and punished with the most fearful tortures the persons commonly called Christians, who were generally hated for their enormities. Christus, the founder of that name, was put to death as a criminal by Pontius Pilate, procurator of Judea, in the reign of Tiberius. But the pernicious superstition, repressed for a time, broke out yet again, not only through Judea, where the mischief originated, but through the city of Rome also, whither all things horrible and disgraceful flow from all quarters, as to a common receptacle, and where they are encouraged. Accordingly, first those, were arrested who confessed they were Christians. So, confess you're a Christian, yes or no? Okay, you're arrested. That's what's happening. Next, on their information, the vast multitude were convicted, not so much on the charge of burning the city as of hating the human race. That was their charge. You hate humanity. In their very deaths, they were made the subjects of sport, for they were covered with the hides of wild beasts and worried to death by dogs, or nailed to crosses, or set fire to, and when the day waned, burned to serve for the evening lights. Nero offered his own garden players for the spectacle and exhibited a Circensian game, I don't know what that is, indiscriminately mingling with the common people in the dress of a charioteer or else standing in his chariot. For this cause, a feeling of compassion arose towards the sufferers, though guilty and deserving of exemplary capital punishment, because they seemed not to be cut off for the public good, but were victims of the ferocity of one man. And so, dear Christian, that is the context of honor the emperor. This idea that there are things so far beyond our control, so far beyond what we could talk about, we could circle up our wagons and get excited about, and at the end of the day to say, I fear God. I know that suffering is not empty and hollow. There is a redemptive aspect to it. Though I don't see it, I will trust that. Though I don't see it, I will trust that suffering can have a redemptive aspect. So, as we walk through this, what I'd love to look at this morning is that verse in chapter 1 when he says, your faith, which is of greater worth than gold, will be shown on that day. There are three people that we get the opportunity to show our faith to, that we get to have our faith proved genuine to. And that's kind of going to be the context as we look through these verses in chapter 3. There's a message our suffering carries to this world. It's not just an internal, suck bucket. There's something bigger going out as you endure trials and suffering. So let's dig into this in 1 Peter 3. It says, finally, all of you have unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, and a humble mind. Do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless. For to this you were called, that you may obtain a blessing. Okay, so a few things real quick is that word empathy is that same idea of empathy, okay? It's the idea of feeling with, Romans 12:15. And so this call is in this body of Christ followers, we are to have a united mind, and Rob spoke to that, but also this empathetic heart towards each other. because we're not those that like one-up each other's suffering stories. If you've ever been a part of that kind of conversation, it's like, well, let me tell you, you know, I went through this, 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 and this. Well, that's nothing. You know, I went through this, 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 and this. That's not empathy. In this community to say, I feel with you in that. And though I might think of an example in my life where something like that happened, I'm going to meet your heart where it's at. So we have this empathy with each other. We have this Philadelphia love with each other, brotherly love towards each other. And I love the word tender heart. Tender heart. Not correcting heart. Not judging heart. Tender heart. Because I think it's true. You don't know what people are going through every day as you meet with them. And we can see just the tip of the iceberg of each other's lives and not know what's the other 90%. Maybe they're really hurting. Maybe they're really confused. Maybe they're really lonely. Maybe they're really happy. We don't know. It requires this relational tenderheartedness to start to get to know that underneath iceberg with each other. And so we create this community where it's safe to do that. And we welcome that, a humble mind. And here's where Peter now goes and he says, again, all this is taken straight from Jesus. Do not repay evil for evil. You have heard that it was said. You have heard that it was said. The Beatitudes. And Peter's saying, this is what it looks like. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Evil, retribution. Something unjust, get justice. And he says, that's not the economy anymore. There's a new economy. And this is the way I thought about it, is we can either live a horizontal economy with each other or we can live a vertical economy with each other. The horizontal economy outlook always says, what you've done to me, I in my heart want to have happen to you now. And we use that either in pain, in retributive justice, in vengeance, or, oh, you invited me over for dinner, I'll invite you over for dinner, right? You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. And it's a very works-based, you know, what I'm going to respond with, it depends on you. And we can have that horizontal economy, but that's not what we're called to. We're called to a vertical economy. Because I have received grace from God, I give grace to others. So do you see how you can have an orientation? You're always doing this transactional thing. It's either horizontal or vertical. That's the only question. And in order to have a posture of blessing others who are reviling and slandering you, you have to keep Jesus front and center. It's not about that person, ultimately. It's not about this personal attack. In order to love in that extreme, radical way, requires us to have our eyes set on Jesus. So do you see how he says, rather than doing this eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, retributive justice, he says, rather bless, because you've been blessed. So it's like that little dish at 7-Eleven. Leave a penny, get a penny, right? Give a blessing, get a blessing. As you bless others, guess what? You will be blessed. There is a blessing for you when you don't return justice and vengeance on others. Now, in our thinking, we think, oh, if I bless them somehow, it'll look this way. No, no, no. You don't get to control what the blessing is going to look like. You don't get to control if that blessing will then turn their heart or make everything hunky-dory or not. There will be a blessing, though, and we're going to look at what are those blessings often that God gives when we do that. So the idea is that we are people like Jesus. We don't, it takes a little bit of love to love those that love you, right? That's what Jesus said. He said, those that love you, that's easy. Even the Gentiles do that. Everybody, scratch my back, scratch yours. That's simple. That's our human fleshly instinct. We demonstrate our best love for our enemies, like Jesus did. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. The greatness amount of your love, the purity amount of your love, the supernatural element of your love is not shown with those that are most like you, and everything is always great. It's shown and demonstrated towards those that are hard to love, towards those that you tend to think of as enemies, as Christ did. That's the demonstration of our love. That's the demonstration of our blessing, because love isn't ultimately a feeling. It is not a feeling. Love is an action based on a belief and a conviction. Love isn't like the crowd, up one day, down the next. Love is this giving of yourself, a sacrificial offering to others. And that blessing, even when you revile me, even when you slander me, even when you misinterpret all these things, whatever might happen, I'm going to choose to love. I'm going to demonstrate and bless as Christ did, to not keep score. So he says why this is true. Because, and this is a passage from Psalm 34, whoever desires to love life and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. So this passage in Psalm 34, it's just so countercultural to our culture today. Our culture says, for those that would love to see good life and great number of days, go get it. It's yours. You deserve it. Whatever you think you want, you should have. Anything is possible. Don't ever say you can't do something, right? He says, no, the first idea of God's instruction and wisdom in seeking good days is restraint. Don't let that flesh beast out. Keep restraint. Let him keep his tongue. Let him keep his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away and do good. And this idea we've talked about before, the face of the Lord, the face of the Lord, his relational posture towards you, his eyes lighting up as you come into the room, is on those who do good, on those that are blessing, those that are walking in the way of Jesus. And I think this is where Peter gets this idea earlier in chapter 3, where he says, husbands and wives, if you're not living in an understanding way, your prayers will be hindered. It says right here, he says, his ears are only open to the prayer of those that are walking in this pattern. So it's not only true for husbands and wives, for all of us. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous. And this idea is that we are walking in this example of righteousness that Jesus paved the way and showed the example for us. That's where God's blessing is at. So already we see, what's one of the blessings when we bless our enemies? The face of the Lord is on me. He's beaming. He says, I see you. I'm so well pleased. You're walking in this pattern of my son. You see what I've done. You see this new economy that I'm building, this new kingdom. I am so proud. The face of the Lord is on you. So that's really great and theoretical and awesome, Nathan, but real life sucks and injustice is real. And I agree, and I say 100% I believe you. But I also believe God's grace is deeper. And I want to share this video with you guys. It's truly remarkable. It just moves me to tears. And it's the daughter of a slain police officer and her eulogy at his funeral. And I want to put the idea in your head. I know this isn't easy. I at least want to put in the idea, it is possible. It is possible. So we're not going to watch the whole thing, but just the first 4 minutes or so.
At this time, Richard and Shelley's oldest daughter, Shelby, is going to pay tribute.
And I knew this day would come at some point in my life. However, I didn't think it would come so soon. And there's so much I want to say about my dad, but I would have to stand up here forever to do that. I've tried to find all the perfect words and to formulate all the right thoughts for this. But as I got up to preach last Wednesday for the first time ever, my dad sent me this text. He said, "Sometimes it feels overwhelming, but I'm here to tell you everything will be okay. You got this. Remember that no matter what, me and your mom got your back. Always and forever. Have fun tonight. Speak from your heart and don't look back. You will do great. I know you will, no doubt. I love you." I don't think he knew that this text would actually mean more than just another Wednesday night for me. It would actually be the text that would send me into speaking at his funeral a few days later. I know many of you knew my father as an officer. You may have seen him in his uniform with a badge and a squad car, but I saw my dad in a different fashion, always in his plaid pajama pants, book in hand, in his silver Ford F-150. Home has felt lonely without him here. I keep waiting for him to pull up in the driveway, to come inside and tell us about some crazy car chase he got into, or maybe even how terrible the 7-Eleven taquitos were for lunch. You never knew. It was always a surprise what he had gotten into that day. However, there was no heavier surprise than to receive a call that your dad had been shot and killed. It will be a day I never forget. I remember having conversations with my dad about him losing friends and officers in the line of duty. I have heard all the stories you can think of, but I've always had such a hard time with how the suspect is dealt with. Not that I didn't think there should be justice served, but my heart always ached for those who don't know Jesus. Their actions being a reflection of that. I was always told that I would feel differently if it happened to me, but as it's happened to my own father, I think I still feel the same. There has been anger, sadness, grief, and confusion, and part of me wishes I could despise the man who did this to my father, but I can't get any part of my heart to hate him. All that I can find is myself hoping and praying for this man to truly know Jesus. I thought this might change if the man continued to live, but when I heard the news that he was in stable condition, part of me was relieved. My prayer is that someday down the road, I'd get to spend some time with the man who shot my father. Not to scream at him, not to yell at him, not to scold him, simply to tell him about Jesus. I've spent the past few days thinking about what it was like for my daddy to lay lifeless in the flesh, but full of life with our Father in heaven. I wonder what it was like to reunite with his father, to see his other officers who fell in the line of duty, but mostly to sit at the right hand of Jesus. I can imagine it's a much better place than here.
Just stop it there. That is not of this world. That is not our normal way of living. And that breaks my heart. And as we think about suffering and injustice and all the wrong in this world, if we go down the road of horizontal economy, nobody is left living. It's just this endless loop of violence and justice against each other. It's only until someone grabs a hold of the grace of God like she has and says, "It stops here. I'm going to bless. I'm going to bring grace. I'm going to pray through tears." And please, you heard her. She says anger, confusion. It's not saying don't ever feel sad, but it's saying I bring that and I lay it before the Lord. And in God's presence, I can't bring my heart to a place of wanting to hate this person. I want them to know Jesus. That is on display, proof genuine for the world to see. What an amazing thing. What an amazing thing. We'll see a couple more examples of that in a second here. So Peter's calling this radical supernatural life to bless those that revile, that slander, that kill, to bless. Who is there to harm you if you're zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed. That is the promise. You will receive a blessing if you are suffering for righteousness' sake. Have no fear of them, nor be troubled, but in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. And I don't think she was probably reading 1 Peter. Maybe she was when she was thinking about what she was sharing at the funeral. But did you see how she said, I can't bring my heart to hate him because I picture my Father in heaven. I have this picture of eternity. I have this picture of the joy that he's entered into. This hope. So 1 Peter 1:13, fix your hope fully on the day when Christ will be revealed. Being a people of the hope, of hope, that is the tether in suffering. That is the anchor point. How do I get my heart around? How do I bring a blessing to this person? Oh, this life isn't all there is. There's something beyond this. It's going to result in your praise, in your glory, in your honor on the day that Jesus Christ is revealed. And so Peter's calling to us, not just this idea, again, with husbands and wives, he says, don't be fearful, but your daughters of Sarah, to be in faith. He's saying, all of us, do not be troubled by them. Do not live in fear. Do not shrink back. Have no fear of them, but have faith. Sanctify. Consecrate Christ the Lord. He's your Lord. I walk in the fear of him for all that's happening. And what Peter is anticipating is, I won't go so far as to say you should always have these things. At some point in your life, walking the way of Jesus, someone should say, I can't understand why you're doing what you're doing. Can you please explain to me the hope, the ground, the foundation? Peter is saying you should be expecting people to come up and say, I'm scratching my head wondering how you could say that at a funeral. I'm scratching my head wondering how you can live the way you live. That our lives ought to demand a gospel explanation for them. Our lives ought to say, there is something way out of this world that you've probably never experienced, so radical, that's why I'm living the way I live. So people go, tell me about what is going on with you? What has happened? Why is that happening in our lives? I want to show you guys a couple more examples. What does it look like in contemporary real life right now to say, I want to bless. I want to operate in this economy vertically with God of grace, not in retributive justice and vengeance horizontally. Just show a couple of examples even from Ukraine right now going on.
Said you are witnessing something that is taking place right in front of your very eyes on the streets. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I think this, Don, really speaks to the sort of desperation of this moment. We just see a small group of people, and I'm hoping you can see them on our shot here. A small group of people have gathered in the main square, and they are kneeling and praying. Because right now there is truly a sense of having no idea what is coming down the pipeline, what is in store for the people of Ukraine in the coming hours and the coming days. And it's freezing cold here. So to see these people kneeling on the cold stone in prayer is honestly, it's very moving, Don. And I think it speaks to the state of ordinary Ukrainians here who have done absolutely nothing to deserve this, who have no quarrel with Russia, who have no desire for
ordinary Ukrainians, just people like you and me, and saying, Lord, bring your blessing. I'm going to seek God for what's happening right in the midst of where a mortar or a shell could come so easily, and say, we're going to stand on behalf of our city. We're going to pray on behalf of our city. We're going to sing to lift up the eyes of those that are around us that are fearful. This is in the metro in Kiev. We are suffering servants. We are those that call out, there's a world beyond this world. You don't have to live like you've always lived. There could be a new inheritance, a new way of living. And whether it's in metro stations as people are worried about if they're going to live or not, and saying, there's hope. There's a God. He's come. Praying, interceding for your city. That's our call. That's what Peter's calling the people here to. That doesn't change. That's still our call today. To be those that say, I'm going to point all of what I'm doing towards an explanation that you don't understand, but I want to share with you. And so, going back to what I was saying at the beginning, what is on display is your faith. It's being proved genuine in really three ways, in my opinion. It's being proved genuine to yourself. I really have faith. When trials come, we're faced with the opportunity to say, I'm out, Lord. You know, I fold. I'm going to let this round go around and not participate. Or to say, I'm going to jump in. I'm going to see what God has for me in this. You get to demonstrate to your own soul, I have faith when you walk through a trial. God is real. I can trust him, not just when the bank account looks great or relationships are great or whatever is your metric of great life. Not only when that's happening, but and the downturn, to say, I trust you, Lord, with that. I'm going to ride this out with you in that. And I believe I'm going to get a blessing. So you demonstrate to yourself. You demonstrate to the world, as we've seen, how powerful a testimony that daughter has. How powerful a testimony the Ukrainian believers have. They are demonstrating to this world something far beyond what CNN or anybody else can get their minds around. And you demonstrate to the heavenly hosts. You demonstrate to the heavenly beings. Right? This idea that your faith is on display. Ephesians chapter 3. We're declaring the manifest wisdom of God to the unseen heavenly realms. You get to display that today. That's your opportunity. In your faith, in your suffering. And when they ask us for a reason for our faith, to do it with gentleness and respect, having a good conscience, so that when you are slandered, those who revile your good behavior in Christ may be put to shame. For it is better to suffer for doing good, if that should be God's will, than for doing evil. And I think this is where I can get lost too, is gentleness and respect. Not angry, loud, okay, now it's my turn. I'm going to put you back in your place. You don't realize all the things you've missed. Gentleness and respect. Understanding, like that daughter said, those actions are just the overflow of being disconnected from God. And so your anger, your yelling, your fury, that doesn't move people closer to the love of Christ. It's gentleness and respect. This posture that they're on a journey, that Christ is drawing them. So if we are to suffer well, we need a few things in our pockets. We need a few things in our hearts, I think, if we're going to suffer well as a people. And one is, we need to first start and understand our first call to suffering isn't to change the thing that's suffering, causing the suffering. It's first to look internal to us and say, God, what are you teaching me? Where do I need to grow? So C.S. Lewis had this great quote. Wise men of old, the cardinal problem had been how to conform the soul to reality. How do I get my heart to grasp and understand all that's going on in the world? And the solution had been knowledge, self-discipline, and virtue. For modernity, the problem is how to subdue reality to the wishes of men. The solution is a technique. So do you see how the first step has changed? Whereas it used to be, let's look at this hard, scary thing and let it change us. Let it change our hearts and drive our faith deeper and understanding and knowledge deeper. To where now it is, there's a really hard, scary thing. We need to change that really hard, scary thing so that our hearts aren't hurt anymore in that way. And because we have a lot of means now to do that, you know, whether it be natural disasters or mudslides or all these things, we could say, we don't want those things to happen anymore. We're going to engineer it. We're going to get our lives in a way so that doesn't happen. So first to say, Lord, I'm inviting you first to rule and reign deeper in my heart before my first step of saying, I'm going to change everything so that doesn't hurt anymore. But here's the blessing. Why we wait on the Lord in suffering. It produces your blessing. Do you want deeper trust in God? If so, we're going to learn how to wait on the Lord in suffering. The trust to deepen is to start to let go of the grip of what we trust in. So if you want a greater trust in God, start to walk in that suffering. It grows in seeing and desiring God over his gifts. That we don't mistake the gifts for the giver. And anytime you've been in a relationship where you've just kind of become the person that gives gifts, how do you feel? When they don't see you as a person, they just see what you can give them. Nobody enjoys that. That's what we do to God. And so at times when those gifts aren't there, what do we start to get? Authentic relationship. Authentic relationship with God. Not just based on the good things that are flowing in. We start to understand who we are apart from our accomplishments or successes or the good life. So we start to get our identity and we start to have our hope transferred from this world to the world to come. That's the blessing that could be yours, could be mine. When they slander, when they revile, that's what you could getting. Trust, relationship, identity, hope. Do you want those things? That's the success that Peter is saying, you get to have this. So, to wrap up, Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh and made alive in the spirit. So Peter's wrap-up idea is he says, guess what? Christ also. He says also. What he's saying is, I know you're going through it. Christ also suffered for sins. He knows what that's like. He knows what injustice feels like. He knows when people's opinion of you skyrockets and then tanks. He knows all of those feelings. And he did it perfectly because he was just. He was the substitute. Our opportunity now, men and women, is to walk in the steps of Jesus and in that same way as his body now to be that substitute. You give me injustice, I'm going to give you a blessing. We are the hands and feet of Christ. And notice it says that he did this so that he would bring us to God. It doesn't say so that he'd bring you to heaven or that he would bring you, you know, the good life, whatever it is. It's relationship. When we stand in the gap and bless in suffering, what is developed? Relational bridges are crossed between warring parties. And that man that shot that officer, guess what? Now there's a bridge. He might walk across it, he might not. But a bridge has been built. If you'd like to relationally walk across this, you are welcome now. And as we endure suffering, we build those bridges to those dark areas for people to start to walk across and they come to God. They come to Christ. They come to relationship. So, there's a lot of reasons people don't believe in this world. My heart in this morning is the one that we might be able to take a little bit off is the last one. As we walk and abide in Christ, none of us are perfect. We're going to do this imperfectly. But as we walk in this way, the intensity of that accusation. Christians, do they really believe what they believe? You know, things got tough during COVID. What was our response? What was our heart attitude? Was it to bring a blessing? Or they go, oh yeah, Christians, when things get really hard, they just start to look out for themselves. They just start to self-protect. And you and I get the opportunity to at least lessen that. Those other ones, God's in charge of a lot of that. But you and I together, we get the opportunity to be this witness demonstrating our faith for the world to say, it's really real. I really believe it. And I know all of this looks like junk. I'm still walking in it and I still trust him. That's our opportunity to have on display. So let's pray. Lord, we do thank you that as the world looks on, we are a city on a hill. We are intended to be your people, shining a different way, a new way to this world. And I pray that you just help us to let that sink all the way down into the very soil of our hearts. I just ask, Lord, that you would radically make us a people that demand a gospel explanation for our lives. And not to show that, not so that we have this badge like, hey, guess what happened to me, but because it's really authentically real. As we walk through suffering, as we walk through injustice, as we walk through slandering, whatever might come of us, Lord, would you make us a people that really believe what we say we really believe and drive that into our hearts. In your name, amen.